You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Project Restart, Episode Restart, the League of Ireland's back, we're back, and I have a special guest host with me this week. I'm delighted to say I've got one of the best in the business when it comes to League of Ireland reporting. It's James Rogers from Dundalk. James, welcome to the show and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Kieran. It's just great to be back talking football again. It's supposed to be so much off the field stuff and what's going to happen, and it's just nice to be looking ahead to actual games and, you know, predicting scores and that sort of thing.
Yeah, very much so. And when I was talking to John Breyer about how we might approach this this episode, I said to him the one thing I don't want to get bogged down in is talking about formats of the league and streaming and different things. There's been enough of that for the last 3 months, and if we started now in the next few minutes, we probably could go on for another couple of weeks talking about it. So I really want tonight's show just to be about the upcoming games in the Premier Division, the First Division. We've got three brilliant interviews as well, actually four brilliant interviews. We've got the Drogheda chairman Conor Hoey, so we do touch on off-field stuff with him a little bit, but we've got Junior, who's just re-signed or back into the League of Ireland with Sligo Rovers. We've got his old boss Declan Devine, and we've got a man you'll know well, James, Lido Latifa, who's just joined Longford Town on loan from Dundalk. So we've got those four interviews to come, but unfortunately, James, we do have to start on a very sad note tonight. The passing of Harry Taff up in Dundalk, it'll probably be doing him a disservice just to describe him as a volunteer. I wouldn't have known him personally. I'd know his work around the club and probably bumped into him a few times, all right, but obviously you're someone that's there every week. I'm sure you probably have a tale to tell us.
Yeah, like, I mean, Harry, I was trying to put words together myself earlier, and you know, he fulfilled a lot of roles. Like, he was I suppose cameraman, groundsman, and, you know, volunteer. But he was more than that. He was a friend. He was a colleague. He was almost like an amateur psychologist at times for a range of people, be it players and that. He just was one of them. I suppose a lot of clubs have them, and that they're what make a club special. Just that sort of X factor that, you know, I think one title would be wrong to put on the man, because he just did so much. He was heavily involved. Like, it's only 8 years ago now, you think of the success the dog have had, but he was heavily involved with the Save Our Club campaign, and, you know, it was one of the best stories probably never written, actually, and sadly probably now never will be. But, like, Harry's own journey from, you know, literally doing the little things to, you know, getting water for the players and you know, campaigning just, you know, for bag packs and different things to keep a club on the road. And listen, unfortunately, League of Ireland, most clubs have been there, you know, to see him sort of evolve and become a member of staff to, you know, to enjoy so many great memorable nights. You know, he's been there for league wins, FEI Cup wins, you know, great European adventures as well. And it was just a great tale. Like, you know, I think Dundalk have made a big effort of being a community club in recent times, and he was never really officially at the forefront of that, but in many ways he was, because he wore that Dundalk coat and jacket round town with great honour, and you know, always was willing to do so much for the club. His family were heavily involved with Dundalk in various roles. His daughter Orla basically ran the club shop in recent years, and his son Shane was regularly involved, you know, in the gantry alongside him. They were just synonymous with Dundalk, and I think the, you know, just looking at some of the tributes to him, it's interesting that so many of the other clubs have you know, weighed in behind it as well, because I think he just had an impact on everyone who met him. He was, you know, that he just had this smile and wit that, you know, people remembered him, and he's definitely a big loss, and I think it's going to be a difficult week for Dundalk now. I think I just briefly spoke to Vinnie Peart last night, and he described him as nearly like a father figure to him, and said he's probably had in many ways a bigger influence than anyone on his coaching career. And I know all the players absolutely love the bones of him as well, so it's a huge loss. And obviously, listen, obviously the biggest sympathy to his family. It's a difficult time for them, but I suppose the one consolation is, you know, there's just outpouring of love for the man right now, and it's just a pity he didn't get to see it.
Yeah, myself, John, and everyone connected with BTS, we all pass our condolences on to the family and everyone at Dundalk FC. We're going to start with our first interview of the night, James. We're going to hear from the new Sligo Rovers signing, Junior, who he had a spell in Israel, obviously top scorer in the league last season with Derry, but he's with the bit already now. There'll be a lot of pressure on his shoulders to get goals for Sligo to try and keep them in the Premier Division. We're going to hear from Junior now. So I'm sure you've all seen the news. Junior is back in the League of Ireland, but it's with Sligo Rovers. Big signing for Sligo as they look to get out of trouble down at the bottom of the leagues. Junior, you're welcome back to the show. It's great to have you back in the league as well, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. It's good being back. And obviously, you know, I've enjoyed my time at Derry, so I'm hopeful I can do more of the same at Sligo.
Yeah, I suppose we have a bit of catching up to do. Obviously, you were only on loan with Derry last year and you had a phenomenal time there. Top scorer in the league last season, helped them qualify for Europe this term. You went back to Colchester then and eventually you moved on to Israel. I suppose many people are probably surprised to see you back in the League of Ireland. So maybe you can tell us how you've reached this point in time and signing for Sligo in the last couple of days.
To be honest, after coming back home from Israel, I was more so just looking for other opportunities, and at the time, maybe a month ago, I didn't really see myself coming back to Ireland. I just thought I was going to go elsewhere and just look for an opportunity. But I did hear from Derry, and at the time, I wasn't really keen on coming back to Ireland. But then recently, I got approached by Sligo, and I just thought like it made sense to come back to Ireland and obviously just help the team and just see what happens from there because of the whole Corona situation and how obviously football's been affected by it and going abroad or in England as well. So I just thought it's good just to go out and just play football because obviously I haven't played football for a long time, so I've just been itching to play, to be fair.
And was the COVID situation, was that one of the big reasons in you departing Israel so soon after your arrival?
Yeah, it was a massive reason because I enjoyed my time at Israel and things were getting better and better there. But then as soon as the COVID-19 situation happened, it just, like, I felt like I had to come back home. I couldn't stay over there because I'd rather spend time with like family and be around family in times like these. So I just thought, yeah, I'd come back home and yeah, that's what's happened.
And it was quite an eye-catching move when you signed for that team in Israel. How did that move come about? Did they notice your performances at Derry or how did the move come about?
Yeah, they saw my performances at Derry and obviously saw I was top goal scorer in the league as well and yeah, they were keen on signing me. It took a while to get the move over the line because at first, Colchester didn't want me to move, but obviously it happened, and yeah, I was very thankful for that.
I suppose that's a positive, though. It does show that the League of Ireland is a league that's been watching. If you do perform well in it, there is big opportunities to be had, and hopefully down the line when things settle down in the world again, if you can do things again for Sligo like you done with Derry, there could be another big opportunity on the way for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good league. It's competitive, and teams play the right type of football, so I think it's a league that's respected and rated. So, yeah, it's a thing where, yeah, if you do well, you can put yourself in the shop window. But, yeah, obviously my aim right now is just to help Sligo win games and hopefully climb up the table.
Mm. Was there any temptation to go back to Derry, especially considering they will be in Europe this year?
Yeah, of course. I thought about Derry because, like, I mean, I've said it before that Derry for me was like a second home and I enjoyed being there, I enjoyed every moment there. The fans were brilliant with me. So, yeah, of course, I considered going back to Derry but then it just didn't happen and I just thought, like, Sligo, the gaffer spoke to me and he was positive, like, the chat was very positive and told me like their visions and what they're trying to do at the club, so I was sold by it and decided to join.
And have you had a chance to meet your new teammates yet?
No, not yet.
I suppose you would have played against Sligo on a couple of occasions last year. that they're a team that's probably struggled for goals a little bit in the last few years. Do you feel a certain pressure going in there now? They're probably looking towards yourself as a man that might dig them out of a bit of trouble this season.
I mean, there's always pressure wherever you go, but I wouldn't say I'm feeling immense pressure. I just feel like, obviously, just go there and play my game, because the manager spoke to me and he's given me that confidence that obviously he just wants me to do more of the same as what I was doing at Derry, and that's just helped the team win. So, like, if the goals come, they come, but the most important thing is to Sligo to win games and climb up the table.
Yeah, and obviously Liam Buckley, very experienced manager in the League of Ireland. He'd be well associated with playing a nice brand of football as well. So was that something he discussed with you when you chatted? What was the style of football and how you might fit into that plan?
Yeah, and he wants, obviously he's let me know like how he would want me to play, and obviously how the team plays. So yeah, I just felt like it suited the way I would like to play, and it just made sense for me to make the move to Sligo.
And final question before we go, because it actually almost slipped my attention until I just had a little look at my notes there, but your first game back is going to be against Derry this weekend. What's that going to be like as an experience?
I don't think I'll be involved in the game because of the 2 weeks quarantine.
Right,
but,
okay.
Yeah, but yeah, if I was, yeah, it would have been a... I don't know, I would have been a bit... it would have been a good game to come back to, but the votes have been like a bit of an emotional one as well, because obviously playing against Derry, I wouldn't have pictured that happening a year or 6 months ago. So it would have been a crazy experience, to be fair.
Yeah, obviously you wouldn't have had the fans in the stadium, but obviously the lads you shared a dressing room with last year would have been probably a strange experience to play against them. Is that something that's happened in your career before? You had quite a few clubs in England. Have you ever come up against a former club in the past?
I have, but it was years after, and obviously different players, right, different management, so it wasn't the same. But to be fair, the fans did remember and tried to make it a difficult time for me when I played against them, but
That's the thing to the fans, they always remember. But just final question, obviously you will be coming back into a league where there's going to be very small numbers of people in the ground. Some clubs are going to let a limited number of season ticket holders in, but others will be totally behind closed doors. How do you think the players are going to cope with that? It's going to be a very surreal experience for the first couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it's a thing where mentally you've got to switch on, because usually when it's like game atmosphere, like the fans that pump you up and you get ready and you just feel more motivated, but because there's no fans, you've got to motivate yourself and obviously like just be ready to put everything in and play. And yes, it's obviously going to be different, but it's something you've got to adapt to, and hopefully it wouldn't affect anyone negatively in Sligo.
Junior, it's been absolutely fantastic catching up with you. Thanks very much for joining us. Best wishes, safe travel over to Ireland, and I know the people in Sligo, they'll look after you well. Great football people down there, so I'm sure you'll get a good welcome.
All right, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Junior, thanks very much. For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. So great to hear from Junior there. James, were you surprised to see him arriving at Sligo? I think if people were going to see him coming back to the league, they probably would have predicted he'd end up back at Derry.
Yeah, definitely. It was the only place, if you had said to me he's back in Ireland, that I thought he'd be back in the Brandywell. But it's a great coup for Sligo, because I suppose after Romeo Parks left, you're just kind of wondering where are the goals going to come from. I know Roman Coughlin's been doing okay with them, but it has been a concern, and certainly he's someone that, you know, proven pedigree in the league, where, you know, as you say, he was top scorer last season, and That could be crucial, because certainly at that bottom end of the table, the major problem you look at that maybe three or four clubs have is where the goal's going to come from. So if he can chip in at all, and obviously a good man to get assists as well, it'll be massive. It's a big signing for Liam Buckley, definitely.
Yeah, it's like only 2 goals from their 4 games so far. They won't be able to call on Junior this weekend because of the quarantine rules. He hasn't actually arrived in Ireland yet, as you heard from that interview, so he won't face his former club this weekend. But we're going to start previewing the games by starting with that game, Derry against Sligo. It's 7th against bottom. Sligo, 4 defeats from 4 so far. As I said, they've only scored the 2 goals, and they both came in the game against Shamrock Rovers. Ronan Coughlin scored in that game. He's been doing well in friendlies as well, so when they eventually can call on Junior, that could be a potent partnership there, Coughlin and Junior, couldn't it?
Definitely, yeah, and I think even like you sometimes forget Ronan Murray's there as well. He probably had a disappointing year last year. I know injuries were part and parcel of that, but if he can get back to the sort of form he was at in Galway, you know, you have a front three there that, you know, just could be the difference between staying up or not. And in such a shortened season, that has to be the priority now for Sligo, because you know, even this first game back, like going to the Brandywell is a difficult first test for them. And you know, all of a sudden, the longer it takes to get that first even point on the board, you know, the worries continue. But, you know, I think, you know, maybe they should be looking at the next few games, like whatever, but Derry, you know, their game in hand against Waterford following Tuesday, and that could be maybe more crucial for them in terms of just, you know, beating the teams around them. They've Shells after that at home and Cork away to follow. So, you know, they just need points on the board as quickly as possible, I think, at this stage, and even maybe just setting out to frustrate Derry on Friday night might be the best option.
Yeah, as you said, with the shorter season now, there's no time to waste. Every team really has to take advantage if they see an opportunity for 3 points, or even, as you said, Sligo, just to get a point on the board now could steady the ship a little bit. They take on Derry, who've had a little bit of an up and down start. 4 games, 1 win, 1 draw and 2 defeats. But they've made a big name signing in the last couple of days, Adam Hamill. I'm not sure if he'll be available. We'll hear from Declan Devine later and he'll probably give us a better indication. But Derry, as I said, it was an up and down start. What have you made of their start to the league campaign?
Yeah, I think they'll be disappointed. You know, 4 points out of a possible 4. I don't think anyone would be tipping them to go the other way in terms of battling relegation, but they'll be disappointed so far. Like, it took a 95th minute goal from Adam Liddell to, you know, avoid another defeat against Finn Harps. And like, I know they had that good win over Bowes, but to lose to Waterford like so late last time out, it was, you know, it was a bit of a blow. And, you know, realistically, if you're going to be in the shake up for Europe, games like this against Sligo, who are, you know, at the bottom end, they're the ones you should be winning, particularly at home. I suppose it's difficult to know where they are in terms of, you know, they've had a few changes over the lockdown, as you say. Adam Hamill's come in and he's looked exciting when he was there before. If he can get back to that sort of form, I know you agreed with me. I thought we both watched Tim Nielsen on the opening night against Dundalk, and I thought he'd be a very good signing. He's obviously gone, just didn't work out. They've brought James Akintunde in. You know, will he hit the ground running? Obviously, they've Walter Figueroa there as well, who's got a few goals in friendly matches. So I think they will pick up the form, and I'd imagine Derry would be sort of aiming for that top 4 again. But again, if they're going to be doing that, they need to be winning games like this again at home against Sligo.
Yeah, Nielsen's a big loss. I'm disappointed to see him go out of the league so quickly. But Derry, good record against Sligo. They've won 4 of the last 5. Do you think they'll back it up here and continue that trend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, having said that, of all the games, you know, there's really no form at the minute. You don't know where players are going to be at in terms of, you know, the prep. Obviously, how will the lack of crowds affect different teams? You know, like, you know, the Brandywell, for example, that crowd behind Derry has to count for something every week. And, you know, without it, is it maybe more of a leveller? We don't know. These are all questions that have to be answered. But certainly, I would be maybe fancying Derry in that one. But as I say, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a few shock results just across the board, because the nature of where we are in terms of the coming back after so long laid off.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong, but I could see it being quite a low scoring weekend. Obviously, we've seen that in England, we've seen it in the Bundesliga as well. The first couple of games were very, very hard to watch, put it that way. There was a lot of games scoreless at half time, and I just wonder if it'll be the same in the League of Ireland here. But we're going to move on and talk about Dundalk and Pats, and this has a slightly different element to it. It's a question I want to put to yourself, James. Obviously, Dundalk, Derry, Bowes and Shamrock Rovers, they had 4 weeks in advance in terms of coming back and training over the other sides. Now, I was at Longford's and Bohemians the other night, and Longford had played Pats the week before, and to be honest, I didn't see a huge gulf in class between Longford and Pats, and in terms of their fitness and first touch and things like that on the night. Both teams were making a lot of mistakes. You could tell they needed the game. But when I seen Bowes the other night, they were strides ahead of where St. Pat's were the week before. So are those top four sides going to have a huge advantage now over teams like St. Pat's?
I suppose they should do, just because they're full time, and you know, particularly, you know, these guys weren't, like, in terms of the dog day, you know, and Rovers, etc. They weren't laid off over lockdown, so they were still following their plans. I know some of the amateur teams were as well. When you're still being paid versus being, you know, not being paid, it certainly is a motivating factor in terms of how much you put into it. You know, the dog are back a while now. To the best of my knowledge, everyone should be available in terms of fitness. McElhenney came on the other night against, I think it was Longford actually, for the second 45 minutes. And you're probably looking at bar maybe Sean Hoare, fully fit squad going into it. So there's serious options. And obviously, when you talk about the bigger clubs now, there's extra substitutes. And with the stronger squad, that could be a big factor as well. Of course, Dundalk, you know, you're going into that game, and you know, there's new players as well, which are new to the league. We only seen about 14 minutes of Stefan Kolovic against Finn Harps in Dundalk's last game, and since then Nathan Adua and Joshua Gatt have come in as well. So, you know, they're a bit of an unknown quantity at this stage. Having said that, I've seen Dundalk in a few games, and I don't know whether it was just the fact it was nearly like a pre-season thing, or the fact that maybe crowds are missing, but I just don't think they've hit their stride yet. Now, having said that, the results have been, they've been decent. They drew with Derry in the first game, and they've won all their others, but you'd like to see a bit more intensity now that the real thing's back. A big question, obviously, over this one is, you know, as we mentioned there about Harry Taff, how will that impact the setup this week? You know, it's going to be a difficult week for the club. And that could be a factor as well in this one.
Yeah, they've got a good record against St. Pat's Dundalk. They've actually won their last three without conceding. And as I said, Pat's, they just looked a little bit off the boil when I seen them a couple of weeks ago against Longford in pre-season. But I'm sure they'll be heading to Oriel trying to at least get a point here. But I would fancy Dundalk to restart the league season with a win.
Yeah, look, they are the favourites. There's no doubt. And I think Pat's have had a bit of an up and down start as well. You know, obviously the beat Sligo and Cork, but the loss to Waterford and Shells, which are games that, you know, Pat should be aiming for realistically that top four, I think, and they're games they should be winning. And if you look at their fixtures, like, you know, four of their next five are against Dundalk, Derry, Rovers and Bowes. So it's a difficult run for them. I know there's no easy game in the league, and that's a cliche, but, you know, you could be dragged the other way very quickly if you don't start picking up the odd point here in those games. And, you know, you must remember in their four matches so far, they've had two red cards. And I know it's so long ago now, people maybe forget these things, but like that disciplinary record needs to be improved upon. So, I mean, they're all things to need to, you know, you can't be going into games like Dundalk away and losing players or anything like that to red cards. It's a massive no-no, I think.
Yeah, they sit fifth at the minute, St. Pat's, so I think those next four games are going to tell us an awful lot about whether they're looking towards that top four or whether it's going to be another kind of underwhelming season for St. Pat's. Before we move on to talk about Cork against Bowes, we're going to hear from the Derry City boss, Declan Devine. And joining us once again on Between the Stripes LOI podcast is the Derry City boss, Declan Devine. Declan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Kieran. It's good to be back after a long time out.
Yeah, I hope everyone is keeping safe and well up in Derry. Before we go on and touch about your game against Sligo this weekend, ahead of the restart, how is the second pre-season, I suppose we're going to call it, how has that gone for Derry?
It's been good. It's been different, to be fair. You know, we came back relatively early, a couple of weeks earlier than other clubs, because we were told we were taking part in this four-game tournament. But obviously the way things have panned out in terms of, you know, the clubs all having to get together to work out a financial package, it's been a long period for us, so there's no point denying that. You know, and we're really looking forward to the game starting, but, you know, ultimately we've got a lot of good work under the players. We've had to recruit a few more players, but, you know, I think the ones that have been here for the duration of that period will be delighted to see the games come nice, thick and fast.
Yeah, it's probably disappointing that four-game tournament didn't take place, but on the flip side of that, from a Derry point of view, you have had a 4-week head start over some of your rivals in terms of preparation, so I suppose it's still been an advantage even though you didn't get those competitive games against the other top three sides.
Well, to be fair, we've got a couple of extra weeks on there, but you know, we're trying to strengthen the squad, and you know, with the rules in the UK, we've got to understand that, you know, it's slightly different to the south. So we've had our advantages and disadvantages, but ultimately, as I say, you know, we've had a couple of good games. You know, we were due to play that 14 tournament, as you say, but we've had friendlies against Dundalk and Bohemians, which were fantastic games for us, and it was a real positive that the League of Ireland clubs are keen to play each other and test each other, you know, in those behind doors games. So that has been a big plus for us. We've had a couple of other games where it was just like practice games, so to speak. But ultimately, we're ready to go. We're looking forward to the first game. We're understanding that every game this year is going to be extremely difficult because, you know, everybody's going to be fighting for their lives and fighting for points. And there's really no room for mistakes. We got to make sure that we do everything to the best of our ability to win as many games as we possibly can.
Yeah, it really is a sprint to the finish. Now we'll chat about your upcoming fixtures in a moment, but before we do, James Rogers from Dundalk is hosting the show with me tonight, and I was asking him about the fact that Dundalk, Derry, Bowes and Shamrock Rovers, they've had that 4-week advantage over sides, because I've watched a couple of pre-season games myself. I was at Longford against Pats and Longford against Bowes, and I thought, to be honest, there was a big seismic difference between the fitness of the Pats players and the Bowes players. So do you think it's going to be a big advantage for the four sides that had that 4-week advantage over everyone else?
I think every advantage is going to count, to be honest. You know, having an extra 2 weeks, yes, it can be an advantage, but ultimately it comes down to match night. It comes down to the desire and the ability of the players to push themselves to extreme levels, and that again in its own right is something that we've got to be very careful of. I know that there's the five substitute rule now, but ultimately you look at the Premier League and you look at the Bundesliga, there's been a lot of data that has shown a lot of muscle injuries and so we've got to be really careful of this, because as we say, you know, it's been so unprecedented having so much time off and then trying to cram on a lot of high intensity work on the professional athletes, you know. So we again have to look at the welfare of the players, and we got to look at the intensity that we're trying to put them through. Relatively the last couple of weeks for us, we've had to actually wrap our guys up a bit because they've been so intense in their preparation and they've been so hungry to do well, and they have the ground running, that we've had to actually take a wee bit off their legs in terms of making sure they're available. And again, looking at the medical side of it, it's something as a league that we've got to be very careful that we're not pushing players extremely hard, because ultimately, listen, if you pick up a hamstring or a groin strain now, you're out for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, and that's nearly half a season for what we're coming back for. So we've got to make sure that the players are well treated, and the medical side of it is taken very seriously.
Yeah, obviously a bigger squad would be very useful there in terms of rotation, as you said, to avoid those muscle injuries. And you've said yourself there a couple of moments ago, you are looking to strengthen the squad, and we have had Junior on a little bit earlier on, and he told us you were in touch with him to maybe try and bring him back to the Brandywell. Are you disappointed you didn't get it over the line?
We're delighted with Adam Hamill has been a fantastic addition for us, a player I've known for a long time, and a player that's had a wonderful career. James Akintunde is a fantastic footballer, a real direct, and I think people will enjoy watching him. Real direct attacking player. And obviously being able to keep Stevie Mullen at the club was a big plus for us as well. So we have a lot of pluses. We're again looking to strengthen over the next couple of days, and we're confident that we can do that. They'll level will leave us really competitive.
Yeah, sorry Declan, I just lost your line for a second there after that question. I was asking about Junior, that you had been in touch with him, and the move just didn't get over the line. Were you disappointed with that?
Do you want to go? I was disappointed, but ultimately, look, we're in the process of, when I first came into the club, I publicly stated that we want the players that wanted to play for Derry City Football Club. That is the case. Junior has decided to go to Sligo. Good luck to him. I wish him well. He's a great lad, and I think Sligo have got a fantastic player. But look, we've got to deal with what we have, what has wanted to come to Derry. I always look for a player that shows you a desire to come and play here and perform here. And as I say, I'm happy with the players that we've brought into the building. You know, we brought James Akintunde in, who has been really impressive over the last number of weeks. We've signed Adam Hamill. You know, Adam is a player I know extremely well that has had a wonderful career and still has so much ability to offer. I think he'll be a real shining light in the league and an unbelievable appetite for the game. And, you know, when I look at those two guys and the willingness to come here and play and have a platform to play here, that's exactly what I want. And if players decide to go elsewhere, then so be it and good luck to them. But, you know, being able to keep Stevie Mullen, you know, there's a bit of interest in Stevie on the back of his early few games for ourselves. And, you know, the fact that he has committed to the rest of the season again is a real positive for us. And ultimately, we're in the mix now for another two or three players over the coming days, and hopefully we'll be able to add to the squad, as I say, in the coming days.
Yeah, and you restart your campaign against Sligo. Junior won't be available, he's told us, because he's still in the UK, so he will have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So you won't be facing your old player there. But as we were discussing, I suppose, a couple of moments ago, it's really a sprint to the finish now. Obviously, Derry, you have goals of trying to finish in Europe again this year. Sligo are battling to stay in the Premier Division. Everything's to play for in these next couple of weeks.
Well, I think for me, you know, it's going to be irrelevant of who you're playing. I think everybody is going to be fighting for their lives. As you say, it's going to be a sprint. But, you know, we got to make sure that our game plan's right. We got to make sure that our preparation is right. You know, no matter who we play, we've got to make sure that we're really on top form. You know, I think the introduction of the five sub rules, as I've said earlier, is going to be something that can improve you tactically. It can also help look out the welfare of the players. But, you know, I don't think, you know, every single game, there's never an easy game in the League of Ireland. I expect it to be even closer as we move on into this really short period of games. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, there's going to be games where, you know, it's 1 point enough or it's 3 points enough, and teams are going to be really going for it. So I don't expect teams to be sitting back too much in this. I think it's going to be a really attacking period for League of Ireland football, and hopefully we can be able to do that as well ourselves.
And final question before we go. Obviously, it's going to be a very strange situation for everyone playing without spectators, especially in the Brandywell, where the atmosphere can be absolutely electric at times. Is there anything you can do from a mental perspective in terms of preparing the team to get them ready for that? Obviously, they're not going to have that supporter sitting in the front row roaring at them to make that extra yard to try and keep a ball in or get on the end of a cross. How do you prepare the players for that?
Well, we're fortunate that we train there, Kieran. We train in a Brandywell, an empty Brandywell, every day of the week, you know, so we should have a slight advantage in that. There's nobody at our training sessions. Our training sessions are very high intensity when they want to be. So it's something that I think that can be in our favour. I also feel that, you know, we said when we came under the club we wanted to fill the stadium. We were able to do that last year. But with a new streaming service, I think we've got to understand that, you know, there's going to be so many people watching the games, not just our own fans, but it's a platform for players to really show their ability.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be fans from every club watching your game. You know, there's going to be a lot of interest in it. There's going to be a lot of discussions on social media. There's going to be a lot of feedback available to everybody. So it's something that we've got to thrive on. It's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. I would love our fans to come in and watch the likes of Adam Hamill. I would love our fans to come in and watch Walter Figuera and Stevie Mallon and James and Akintunde. So we have a lot of ability within our group. We have a lot of good players, but ultimately we got to go and show it on a basis, whether there's a full stadium, an empty stadium, because right throughout the country there's going to be a lot of eyes watching all the games of every club, and it's something that we have to embrace and try and showcase the natural ability that's in this league.
Yeah, let's hope the streaming goes well, and let's hope the numbers are really, really positive. Declan, absolutely brilliant talking to you. It's great to hear Derry are shaping up well ahead of the restart, and thanks for joining us.
Brilliant, Kieran, and good luck for the rest of the campaign. Thank you.
Cheers, Declan. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Paul. Thanks a million.
Top man. As always, great to hear from Declan Devine. Let's move on. Cork against Bowes. James, I have to say, Cork are my favourites to go down this season. They've had a very, very poor couple of weeks in terms of friendlies. I know you're never meant to read too much into friendlies, but they lost to Galway, they drew at Cove, and they struggled past Middleton in a friendly recently as well, whereas Bowes were very, very impressive the other night against Longford. They won 2-1, but there was a number of really standout performers, including Danny Grant. He was absolutely unplayable on the night, so I'd be looking towards a Bowes win here.
Yeah, like, what do you say about Cork? Like, to be fair, it's so long ago now, but it was a really horrendous start they made. But having said that, it was a bad start on paper as well. Like, you know, Shells being their first game back in the Premier was their opening game, and I suppose they were always going to be fired up for that. I mean, you had Rovers and Dundalk away in quick succession, you know, so, you know, getting that win over Finn Harps back in February was, I suppose, crucial for them. But then they lost to Pats in the last game. I think they really need to make Turner's Cross a difficult place to go again. And, you know, that needs to start this Sunday for them. You know, whatever about Bowes, as you say, Bowes are in good form. I think the games I'd be watching as a Cork fan in particular, the next two after that were their way to Waterford and home to Sligo. Having said that, I think they've probably improved their squad a little since the lockdown, like bringing Kevin O'Connor back and Graham Cummins will add a bit of experience to what they already have. I think they're underperforming massively. There's no doubt they're not the Cork that were battling for leagues a few years ago, but like if you look at the likes of Darragh O'Connor, you know, he's a fantastic player, so is Garrod Morrissey and that. So, you know, you'd have to be worried about them at this stage, there's no doubt about it, but, you know, the players they brought in, are they good enough? That's the question. You know, I know they've announced recently they've held on to the likes of Darling and Joseph Oliwa, but I just don't know where they'll be, and a lot could depend on how much the young lads that they have at the club, the likes of the Alex Burns, the Ben O'Brien, Whitmarsh, etc., how they can step up and chip in. Cork have always had a sort of good youth setup. I probably wouldn't be as worried about them as you. I do think there's enough quality there to drag them out of it, but at the same time, it's a very difficult start coming up against Bowes first time, and the longer, I think, you know, it's such a short season as well that, you know, more games go on, we forget, like, if you have an injury, you could be out for the season. And that applies to all clubs, and even a three-match suspension, you miss nearly a quarter of the league season now. So it really is a case of, like, I just think they need to make Turner's Cross a difficult place to go to again, which it wasn't enough of that last season, and certainly early this season.
Yeah, well, funny enough, I'd actually disagree with you there. You're saying that Cork are probably underperforming, but I think this sort of season was marked on the cards when you look at the players they brought in the off-season. They were shopping in the first division. They were bringing players in from English clubs on loan. They clearly haven't settled. They haven't gelled as a team. Now, I don't know whether those players went back to the UK during the last couple of months and how gelled that Cork team is. They're still going to have to take time to get used to each other. Their pre-season results or friendly results, whatever you want to call them, haven't been positive, so that suggests that they still are bedding players in there, and there's just a few players I look at and they don't look like the sort of players you'd want in a team that are going to be on the back foot and in a relegation fight. Now, the fact that there's no fans into Turner's Cross might actually help them, because the fans mightn't be on their back if results aren't going their way, and they do like to play a nice brand of football, Cork, and Neil Fenn's always done that with his Longford teams and with his Cork teams. Even though results haven't gone, they've been playing nice football, so they'll be allowed to do that without fans in the stadium. But I just look at that Cork team and they look really, really disjointed, whereas Bowes, they probably don't play as attractive a football as the Dundalk and the Rovers of the league, but they're a really, really well-organised unit. They know what they're about, and they've got some really, really good players there at the moment. Danny Grant, Mandreu, they're full of talent. So I'd be looking to a Bowes win there. I just think Cork defensively have been awful this season. They're already on minus 10, and I think Bowes will continue their good record against Cork. They're unbeaten in their last three against the Rebels.
Oh yeah, like only one winner for me in this one. I mean, I've seen Bowes recently myself to play Dundalk, and they were a bit off colour that night. They actually think it was the first game back. I know they've improved since then, but like at one point they made 10 changes, and you know, it emphasised the strength of their squad. And sometimes you do think of Bowes as maybe just part time team, and they're not really, like, you know, their squad is massive. They've an awful lot of talent there, and I think this is one of the, you know, it's one of these games they need to be winning. For me, Bowes are the closest to the top two right now. I don't think they're quite in the Rovers or the dog bracket, but it's a game they should be winning at the same time. You know, they've had a few unlucky results at the same time this season. You know, you took back to the opening day losing the Rovers and that. But yeah, I definitely think it could be. You mentioned the fans there, though, Kieran, and I think it will be interesting to see. Like, sometimes I get what you're saying about maybe Cork, the fans getting on their back, but equally the shed down there can be a tasty environment for an opposing team as well. So it can work both ways. And even Bowes, when they do return to Daly Mount, it's actually the following week against Dundalk. Will they miss that? Like, that's what I wonder. Like, you usually have Daly Mount sold out, and you know, how do players react to that? And these are not the unknowns we have. That, you know, if I'm a Bowes player 10 minutes to go and I'm feeling a bit tired, that roar, the Jody or whatever, can give you that bit of a lift and give you that extra 10%. And it's really interesting to see how teams would adjust to that sort of, you know, it's nearly training game environment.
Yeah, very much so. Let's move on to talk about the table topper, Shamrock Rovers. They take on 8th placed Finn Harps. Harps had a really good start to the season. They took 4 points from their first couple of games. They were very unlucky in that defeat at Turner's Cross. And they shipped a few goals before the break, though. They lost 4-0 to Dundalk. And they were probably outclassed that night, and they're up against a classy rival again here in Shamrock Rovers. 15 goals for the Hoops so far. They've only conceded 4-5 wins from 5, and they haven't lost to Finn Harps in a long, long time. In fact, they've actually won, I think, the last five against Harps without even conceding a goal.
Yeah, it's a funny fixture. I'd expect Rovers obviously to win it, but equally they're probably one of the clubs who are probably most inconvenienced by the lockdown, because they were really flying at the start of the season. You know, you think back to that win over Dundalk and the confidence that would have given them coming off the FAI Cup win, you know, a few months earlier, and all of a sudden that's halted. You know, I think this is the sort of game in many ways now. While I would back Rovers for it if I was betting, I think this is the sort of game Ollie Horgan sort of loves, because his team are probably written off before the game as far as he's concerned. So he can go in with that nothing to lose attitude, I suppose. And in a funny way, I know Rovers have an excellent record. I think it's probably the best in the league in terms of a head-to-head over Finn Harps in history. Like, 3 of the last 4 have actually only been 1-0 between these games. So Harps just in recent times have just found a way to frustrate Rovers, and I think they'll set up to do that again. I would back Rovers again to nick it, but it wouldn't shock me if it's another 1-0 or something like that. Obviously Harps, you know, they just need to beat the teams around them, and I think these are sort of games where you go in with a hiding to nothing. For Rovers, I think, you know, they should have more than enough. Like, it's interesting, David Dean Williams has been in great form since they've come back. I think he's 7 goals in 5 games. They should have Graham Burke back now. He was missing, you know, when the league ended. And Rory Gaffney's obviously a relatively new addition as well, but we've seen when he came off the bench against Dundalk, the impact he can have. I just wonder when games get tighter how big a loss Greg Bulger will be. I think that could be a massive injury blow for them, but certainly for this one, I'd fancy them to get another 3 points on the board and make it 6-6.
Yeah, certainly going in the other direction anyway, Bulger will be a loss. He's that real holding player in that midfield. You've named a list of really creative and attacking players there, but Bulger is the man that kind of holds it all together in that midfield, a little bit like Stephen Rice used to do back in the day for that Rovers team that won back-to-back league titles. But I'd probably be following your line of thought about Harps making it difficult for them if it was in Finn Park, but it's in Talla, and I don't see Shamrock Rovers dropping any points there. And they're obviously 3 points clear of Dundalk at the moment, and the shorter league season, they're very much in the driving seat. So let's move on to another Dublin side, Shells against Waterford. It's 5th against 6th, level on points, these two. Shells, they're just ahead because they've conceded a goal less than Waterford, and Waterford obviously a new boss in position in John Sheridan, a real high profile name. But I just look at that Waterford side and he has a bit of work to do, doesn't he? They look a little bit disjointed in their opening games.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I suppose as a Waterford fan, you probably would have been relatively happy with your start. I mean, 6 points, you know, out of 12, you know, they were probably tipped to struggle. But they're probably the hardest to talk about in terms of so much has changed. Like, obviously, Alvin Riddins has gone, John Sheridan has come in. What does he really know about the league is so far? Maybe that could be an advantage to him as well. Funny enough, he did work with Ian Morris at Chesterfield, so he knows the opposition coach this weekend. But it is a funny one. There's talk of Curtis Byrne signing for them, but their big signing, Daryl Murphy's not going to be available just yet, and Michael O'Connor is even a loss, I think, too. So you'd have to worry about where maybe goals have come from. You've also lost Kevin O'Connor and Graham Cummins to Cork. Scott Allardyce hasn't returned, and neither have Akeen Odimeo and Andre Burley. We didn't see a lot of them, but the squad has certainly been sort of decimated from what it was.
There's a lot of change there. Whereas if you look at Shelburne, they were really, really organised early on in the season. That they're not probably the most attractive team in the league to watch, but Ian Morris has put a plan in place there and they stick to it. And we've seen them picking up like wins over the likes there of St. Pat's and Cork, where they really dug it out and they kind of bullied those teams on the day and outfought them physically and tactically. And I just get the feeling here that they're the more organised unit going into this game against Waterford.
Definitely. Definitely, yeah, and they've had some good results in friendlies as well. I think Gary Deegan gives them real steel in the middle. And with the likes of Carl Shepherd, Kieran Kilduff in attack, I think, you know, with the likes of Jays and other players around them, I think they have a goal threat, which is going to be crucial, you know, because sometimes you look at teams and you just wonder where goals come from. I think Shells will be okay. I like the squad they've put together. And as well as that, you must remember, which could be a factor certainly in the early games, they kept paying their players through lockdown as well. So I think they'll be good, in good nick coming back, because they were obviously following their programme maybe closer than other teams, and they didn't have that disruption that other clubs might have had. So certainly I'd fancy them maybe this weekend, because Waterford, as I say, they are a bit of an unknown quantity, and it could take John Sherwin while maybe a couple of weeks to get. I'd even expect maybe a few changes to that squad before the weekend. There's talk of a couple of targets from Scotland. There's talk of maybe Coves, Charlie Lyons coming in. But then if you do bring players in, you know, particularly from the UK, which they've done, do they have to quarantine? Yeah. So I think Waterford could be a work in progress for a couple of weeks yet.
Yeah, as I said, there's just so much change going on there. And when I've been following kind of Waterford fan groups online over the last couple of months, there's been an awful lot of negativity and doom and gloom, and probably rightfully so at times, because there's not been a lot of news coming out of the club. And then they lost their manager, and Sheridan's come in, which has probably given them a boost to get such a high profile name in, but he's not overly experienced as a manager. So I just look at Waterford and their level on points with Shells, and I just feel Waterford, if they're going to go in any direction, it's probably going to be going lower down the table. Not suggesting they'll be in a relegation scrap, but stranger things have happened, especially if it takes them a while to gel. Whereas I look at Shells there, if they can get a win here, they'll move on to 9 points, and Bowes are on 9 points in third. Could Europe just be on the cards for Shells this season? St. Pat's, we said we're not overly sure on Pat's this year, where they might finish up. They've got to be maybe looking at that fourth position, haven't they?
Yeah, like you never know. If you look at their only two defeats so far were against Dundalk and Bowes, who, you know, you would expect them to, you know, finish behind them. Certainly I was at the Dundalk game, and you know, Dundalk were probably a bit lucky that night to get out the 3 points. Maybe just shaded it. But particularly, you know, it's such a short season, the momentum could be massive as well. And if you look at their next three, they've Waterford, Harps and Sligo. You know, you take 9 from that, which certainly on paper you'd expect them to. It gives you a great chance to kick on, and you just never know. You just never know. They're a good, as I say, I like the squad he's put together. They need a bit of luck as well, but I think, you know, Talca will be a difficult place to go. It's a tight, narrow pitch, and you know, they have that experience there that, you know, will prove crucial. So they have a good mix, and you know, I'd fancy to get back up and running with a win now the weekend. And as I say, the fixtures there after that do suit them in terms of, you know, potentially really kicking on. And you just never know. We usually get a surprise packet challenge, and it could be Shells.
Look, Shells would have been absolutely delighted with mid-table and safety at the start of the season. But I just think there might be a window opening there, especially with such a short season now. If they could get a nice start for the restart, then they could just get a little bit of momentum behind them and could be hard to stop. But that's our Premier Division previews wrapped up. I would encourage everyone to listen in. I'm sure most of you already have done it, but I think the streaming package for the Premier Division is absolutely fantastic value, €55. It's working out with €1 a game, and that money is going to be split evenly among the 19 clubs. So the Premier and the First Division clubs will see the benefit of it. So I really hope that everyone will support that streaming package, and hopefully it'll go nice and smoothly. But before we go on to talk about the First Division fixtures this weekend, we're going to hear from Drogheda United chairman, Conor Hoey. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line for the very first time by the Drogheda United chairman, Conor Hoey. Conor, welcome back to the show, or welcome to the show, I should say.
Thanks very much, Kieran. Delighted to be on it.
So it's been a long way for football, but we're not too far away. Drogheda, they travel to Tallaght on Sunday to take on Shamrock Rovers 2. You must be looking forward to finally playing some football again, Conor.
I am, and as much as I'm looking forward to it, and everyone associated with the club, the players are more than anything. And you know, having watched a couple of training sessions in the last few weeks, my God, they're hungry to play, and you know, you can see they're all really chomping at the bit, and I'm sure it's the same for every other club in the First Division and the Premier Division. You know, players just want to get back playing, and I think that's the thing that really shines through when you watch a training session. That's why they're in it. They love playing football, and they're, you know, that you can see, as I say, they're all hugely enthusiastic to get back into a competitive action.
Yeah, I suppose we will have a chat about the Drogs on the field, because you were just finding a bit of form before the league was paused. But you haven't been in the role that long as Drogheda chairman, would I be right in saying you're there probably just over a year, and you probably couldn't have timed it worse in the end, could you?
Yeah, well, I mean, 18 months in, yeah, I sort of was halfway through, the start of last season, I came on, you know, February last year. Look, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. It's been good, actually, generally. I mean, we've got a good team in place. It's like with anything when you come in and you want to change a few things around and get some new blood in, and there's always a list of things that you need to do. I mean, we took on fairly big debt when I arrived in, and we've been trying to manage that down. I mean, the club made a profit last year for the first time in many years, although, you know, that profit went to paying down the debt. But, you know, that's, we sort of stabilised the club financially. And then, of course, COVID, you know, and then we had a great season last season. You know, we just missed out on promotion, but we had a great run, you know, just to the right, to the 120th minute of the last playoff, the last kick of the game almost, you know. But that was we had a great season. That was our centenary year last year. And, of course, that was it was a great year for the club. And then, you know, my dad, who was, the sort of lifelong sort of chairman or president of the club, he died in just at the end, literally the day before the Finn Harps game, actually, last year. So we'd, that was a fair emotional roller coaster, not just for me and family, but for everybody involved in the club. So then we took stock and we started again, and we retained Tim Clancy, which is one of the, and Kevin Doherty as our management team, which was great. And then we brought in we've retained a lot of the players that we want, but we brought in some really good young talent, and that's the bit that I get the biggest thrill from, is seeing some new young talent coming through. And we were a bit unfortunate not to get at least a point against Longford, I'd say, at the start of the season, but the other two games we won well in Cove, and we won against UCD in United Park. So look, as a club, we're on the right trajectory, you know, and to me, and you'll know this well yourself, it's about having stability and sustainability in the football club. And, you know, what I want to see is that we're financially sustainable. We've done a lot of work with the FAI and the new management in there, a lot of work with my colleagues and all the other First Division clubs. I would love to talk a bit about that later on, because we have a really good working relationship with every other club in the league. And so we're on the right path. A lot of work to do, but there always is in League of Ireland clubs, you know.
And Conor, talk to me about the stadium plans.
Yeah, that's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, this has been going on for 30 years, you know, trying to get a new stadium for Drogheda United, you know, back in the mid-2000s when we were, winning leagues and Santander Cups and Cups and all the rest of it. You know, that we had the stadium, and then, of course, the financial crisis hit, and that all went to the back burner. But it's never really, we've always kept looking at it. The couple of things, we made an application, what was it, maybe a year ago, for funding, some of the central capital, grant, some capital sports funding, I should say. We got rejected there, as did many other sort of organisations. But we've sort of taken stock again. We have certainly interest in people acquiring United Park and providing funding for a new stadium. So we're trying to still work about it. You know what the problem with it is, Kieran? I'm always wary of crying wolf on these things, or being the boy who cried wolf. There's been so many false dawns of Drogheda United Stadium. I almost don't want to say anything about it till I know somebody's put a shovel in the ground and I've literally somebody started to build it. So we're still doing lots of good work. We have great support from the FAI on this, who, as you would know, are actually the owners of United Park, albeit all investment or any, if United Park is ever sold, the money has to go into football in Drogheda. So we know that we have some, money to at least start in a stadium. And there's a really good, the one thing that Gary Owens and the guys at the FAI, Walter and everybody there, has really focused on is facilities is a massive part going forward of the League of Ireland and the new structures going forward. So we really are all focusing on that. And we're working well with the FAI on that. So I think we have a strong possibility for the stadium, certainly in the coming years. But again, I'm wary of not being too overly optimistic about it, because there's a lot of moving parts, county councils, buyers of United Park, people to build the new stadium, etc., etc. But, the focus is on facilities. And the only way the league here generally in Ireland, and this isn't just for Drogheda United, it's for many other clubs, is going to really, rebrand itself and gain the public's imagination is if we have better facilities. And that's the key point for me.
Yeah, and look, even when you have a shovel in the ground, as we've seen with Finn Harps, it doesn't always guarantee that you're going to get a stadium quite quickly as well. As you said, there's a lot of different...
Right. Look at Finn Harps, yeah.
There's a lot of different hoops you have to jump through. And I do want to talk to you about your relationship with the FAI and your work with the FDA, the First Division Alliance. But first, just while we're on the subject of United Park, obviously... COVID has changed everything for League of Ireland clubs and Drogheda United. You probably have challenges there with United Park already as it is. It's quite an aging ground, but I can imagine it's only been made more harder now by COVID and trying to have safe social distancing and the right facilities for the players there. I know you've already made the decision. You won't be allowing any spectators in. It will be only officials and players, etc. And you'll be streaming the game. So maybe you'll tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a couple of friendlies in United Park over the last week, which were great, actually, just in terms of, you know, testing how it would all work. And they've gone really very smoothly. You know, we basically, as you know, in United Park, and you're absolutely right, it is a bit decrepit there, but we've been able to use the upstairs in the clubhouse, basically the home team. Our team changes upstairs, and then downstairs is used by the away team. And, you know, everybody's coming in through the right entrances and leaving the right way, and there's all the proper social distancing going on. So we've actually been able to manage it without having to bring in prefabs for our away teams. We just use the upstairs in the clubhouse to help us in that regard. So, and, you know, players are, you know, there's no showers, all that sort of stuff is making life a little bit easier to manage in that regard. And, you know, you have to take all the names and addresses of everybody there. They have to be resubmitted in advance, etc. So the two tests we've had have gone reasonably well. You're absolutely right. We're not, we decided to, when we looked at the social distancing required, you know, we have 600 season ticket holders in Drogheda now. You know, a couple hundred of those are kids. But, you know, and we just thought, you know, if we can only let in, I don't know what the number would be, 60 or 70. Mm. And it's going to be very onerous to do that and ensure that they're all, you know, kept apart. We just think it's easier to introduce streaming. And once we can get to a, you know, less social distancing, let's call it that, whether it's a metre apart or we're allowed to have 500 people in the ground, then at least I can see a route to letting season ticket holders in. Up until then, as just like many other teams, and I was really impressed with what Galway have done this week on their streaming. That's sort of the model we're looking at using now as well. So, yeah, we'll be introducing streaming for season ticket holders, and obviously it's something that anyone else can be able to buy into. We're actually waiting today for some more information from the FAI and how they can help us with streaming. So I think that's the prudent way forward. I see some clubs are doing lotteries and, you know, in terms of trying to, you know, let some season ticket holders in. I just think the difficulty in that is you go to a game because you want to go with your pals, your family, yeah, you know, and that's sort of sitting at a game on your own. If you win a lottery, I think you want to be there with the three or four people you always meet at the game. So I think we think it's easier and safer for everyone if we just wait until the social distancing rules get relaxed a little bit.
And how confident are you about the streaming at the moment? Obviously, you said you've been looking towards what Galway done. I've seen a bit of their stuff last week as well. It was very impressive. And I know other clubs are trying bits and pieces out at the moment. And a lot of clubs in the First Division, they're relying on volunteers, really. But you said you've been in touch with the FAI. How helpful are they being at the moment? I know there was a bit of disgruntlement between First Division clubs that they didn't get more assistance.
Yeah, I'm actually waiting literally today to hear back. We're due to hear back from them today about some of their ideas about how we could, I don't know whether that's leverage some of the existing infrastructure they put in place for the Premier clubs, for example, or whether they have a, you know, some other way of helping us. But I've looked in detail at what Galway have done, and their model would work for most First Division clubs, to be honest. But you're right, it does rely on volunteers. This is the problem. If you need to pay cameramen and you need to pay commentators and things and all the rest of it, then your costs go up. If volunteers can help you out, you can keep the cost down. There is still a cost, for example, whether it's if you're linking to a 5G network or if you're using one of these US companies that we're looking at, who basically help you to manage the subscription process for buying streaming. So some interesting stuff around that. Daycast are the ones we're looking at in the States. It was recommended to me. But it's relatively, when you look at it, actually, streaming can be done. There's lots of different grades of streaming. You know, you can put in this, you know, amazingly, you know, multiple cameras, all really sexy, or you can do something a little bit simpler, but can be just almost as effective with less cameras. So I think that's what we're probably looking at. But we're a little bit lucky, I'll be honest, in Drogheda, because our first home game isn't until the week after next. So we have a little bit more time than some of the clubs who are at home this week.
And would you be confident that it isn't going to cost the club money in terms of turning a profit? I know you're probably not expecting to make a huge amount of money through streaming, but would you be confident that it's not going to leave a black hole there, put it that way?
Yeah, I hope not, actually. And do you know what's interesting? I made this point to a lot of the clubs this week, is actually the revenue you're going to make on it is actually from away fans, not from home fans, because mainly, you know, your season ticket holders you'll be giving free, yeah. And then of course you will have some home fans who might want to, you know, certainly people around the world, like Drogheda fans, whether they're, we might get a few in Turkey and the UK and America, whatever, we'll get a few like that. But actually the point, I made the point, is if Drogheda are playing away to Longford, for argument's sake, I would be amazed if there isn't a couple of hundred Drogheda fans who'd pay a few euro a go to watch that match that's being phased, you know, that'd be playing in Longford. So actually, I think what you'll end up is the situation where, I'm taking Longford as an example there, that Longford will help to market Longford's streaming solution to our fans, because it gives our fans something to watch, which is what they want to see. They want to see the club, so the team playing. So it's funny, you might make the money from the away fans rather than the home fans.
Yeah, no,
to cover the costs.
It makes perfect sense, all right. Talk to me about that Turkish relationship. It's something that really catches the imagination of League of Ireland fans when they see this interaction between the Turkish supporters and Drogheda Online.
Yeah, extraordinary one. I mean, it was really came, my sister actually was the PRO of the club back 10 years ago, and she did a lot of work in Turkey through the travel industry, and I know there was a number of other, you know, people got involved, and you know, in sort of building the relationship and becoming sister clubs with Trabzonspor. You know, we share the same colours. There's a there's a history of a relationship between Turkey and Ireland, where the Turkish Sultan sent aid during the famine to Ireland, and it came into Drogheda, etc. So, and we share the, you know, the star and crescent of Drogheda. It's obviously quite a Turkish symbol as well. So there's a lots of links there. It's phenomenal, to be honest with you. When we put up something on Twitter, which, you know, gets hooked in by, you know, either Trabzonspor's official, you know, site, or by even their supporters club, you know, you can end up with 5,000 or 10,000 likes on something, you know, and they've been so unlucky. We thought they were going to win the league, the Turkish Super League, this season. Unfortunately, they were pipped at the post at the end. They just fell away at the end, which was a shame. But they're so passionate about football in Turkey. Like, yeah. I mean, I've been there a few times to watch football, and you know, it is just phenomenal. And we've a good, you know, relationship at board level between the two clubs. They came over to play us back, and I can't remember what it was, 2011 or 12. Infamously, it was a big, you know, the whole team came over, flew over from Turkey, and then the worst rain that's ever hit, ever hit Dublin happened, and Tala was underwater, basically, where we went to play them, and the game got called off. But, you know, there was a lot of business links being built between them, between the two countries off the back of that. The Turkish ambassador we have a great relationship with. I was in seeing him last year, and you know, what I want to do, and I was trying to do this year, but of course everything's gone against us with COVID. I want to bring Drogheda United over to play Trabzonspor in Trabzon. You know, they have a 45,000 capacity stadium there. It was meant to be a pre-season friendly. We were trying to do it this year because it's the 50th anniversary of Trabzonspor, I think, this year. And there's another big celebration they've got on. But anyway, that had to go on hold. But maybe next year, I wanted to do it more as it's something for Drogheda, building a link with Trabzon, not just the football club, but actually the town, business, tourism, and things like that. And it's, you know what, it does show you, and I want to do it with more clubs than just Trabzon, you know, and I think it's something League of Ireland clubs should look at. It's just building these relationships with other clubs and these affiliations. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to spend huge amounts of money on it. I'd love to be able to get to a point with Trabzon where I can say, look, I've got two really talented young lads here in Drogheda. Can I send them over for pre-season training with Trabzon? Or can we sponsor one or two of them to come over and spend a month on trial there or something like that? You know, so there's, you know, I'd like to do that with clubs. There's a couple of German clubs I'm looking at as well to have similar sort of relationships, and in Italy as well. So, you know, these are the things where it's important for the League of Ireland to start sort of spreading its, you know, the vista, I suppose, of where you can, you know, get support beyond Ireland as well. And it's a good thing for Irish clubs, and it's a good thing, I think, a good thing generally for the league. And I think things like streaming and what's happening this week really help the international profile of the league as well. You know, so I think I'd encourage a lot of clubs to do that. We've been a bit lucky with the Trabzon thing, you know, for I don't know how it really emerged, but they're such fantastic people and so passionate. You wouldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with this. It's something probably other clubs should look into trying to form links, because when myself and John went over to Wales last year, we went over for a game in the Welsh League, Bala against Carnarvon, and we got chatting to a group of Carnarvon fans, and it turned out that the fans we were talking to were actually board members at the club, and they loved the fact that we had gone over from Ireland just simply to watch the game. And the next day we woke up and we got an email from them, and they were trying to arrange a friendly between Longford and Carnarvon. Now, Carnarvon had just qualified for Europe, and they have one of the best travelling supports in the Welsh League. They'd bring a couple of hundred supporters to every game, so it would have been fantastic if we could have arranged that and got something, but in the end I think it just fell through. But it's definitely something that the other clubs should look at. Connor, I know I've kept you well over the 10 minutes that I promised, but...
I'll tell you... No, Kieran, and you know, I just the one you've just one thing on what you've just said there about Carnarvon, you're absolutely right. Is what we should be looking at. I've spoken to some of our lads about doing this. Is almost football tourism packages, yeah, for League of Ireland. So saying, like, we'll pick up people who come in from the airport, bring them down to the match in Drogheda. They could do some stuff around the Boyne Valley, Newgrange, etc., and Drogheda for a weekend. Like, actually putting together tourism packages for League of Ireland is not a bad idea at all, actually.
Yeah, and Bohemians are probably one club that have kind of done that. I know they sell the tourist tickets for the Dublin Derby every year, because Daly Mount been such a historic ground and such a unique ground, I suppose, in the age of modern football. It does attract a lot of overseas supporters. But before I let you go, Connor, the last thing I want to ask you about is the First Division Alliance. I think you've probably been one of the men to the fore of that group, and there seems to be a really good connection between the First Division clubs. That hasn't always been the case down the years, but there seems to be a good unity there. Obviously, they've had a lot of challenges this year. There was the Shamrock Rovers debacle at the start of the year, and now you've had the COVID issue and the streaming and a few other things on the side as well. And there seems to be a good unity there between the clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure for me to deal with every other club in the First Division, and I never thought I'd say that when I came into the role. Like, literally, I can pick up the phone to not just the chairman, but people around all of the clubs in the First Division, and just chat about anything, whether it's season ticket prices, whether it's how they're dealing with streaming, whether it's, you know, so many different aspects about of running the club. And we've all got a really open working relationship, because all we all want to do ultimately is we want to see our clubs thrive, but we want to see the league thrive as well. And we feel the First Division gets a raw deal a lot of the time, you know, and actually the quality of the football that we see is great. We get forgotten, you know. I mean, it's I love the LOI Go stuff that's come out in the last week, and it's brilliant for the league. But again, we're forgotten in that, and I understand why. And I don't want to moan too much about it, but you know, we've a good product in the First Division, and you know, hopefully there could be some changes in the league structures going forward, whether it's the All Ireland League or other changes that we might see, which will propel an First Division clubs to improve every aspect of how they're run. And the way I look at the League of Ireland is, there are 19 or 20 clubs, if Limerick come back, in the league. You know, they're all as good as each other in some shape or form, to be honest with you. You know, and there's a lot of, there isn't a huge gap between, and you'll see in some of the pre-seasons that we've had in the last few weeks, there's not that big a gap between some of the Premier clubs and the First Division clubs. And what we need to do is narrow that gap as much as we can. And you know yourself, I know that, look at Longford when they played Bowes last year in the Cup, it was very tight. And I've seen it, you know, Drogheda playing Finn Harps in the playoffs, nothing in it. And so I think, you know, we have to start looking at the league as a whole rather than trying to create elites within it. And coming back to the FDA, the First Division Association, brilliant people, hugely, I think people would be surprised at how well all the clubs are actually run in the First Division. I'd argue the quality of the people who run clubs in the First Division is as good, if not better, than that the people who run the clubs in the Premier League. Now, it's a different scale, I get it, but actually there's hugely impressive people that I've dealt with, and some new people come in, like Bill O'Leary in Cove, just a brilliant guy, Bill, you know, just, you know, thoughtful, huge, great business experience, getting things right, you know. And then you have the more experienced people like Jim in Longford, who's been around but knows exactly all the foibles and the ins and outs of running League of Ireland clubs, to Niall O'Driscoll with an amazing background from insurance, who runs Bray. Yeah. Just really, it's been a real pleasure, I have to say that. I've really enjoyed working with them and for the good of the league, which has been brilliant.
Conor, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I could keep you on all day. Really interesting stuff. I hope our listeners are going to enjoy it. And I just want to wish Drogheda best wishes for the rest of the season, and hopefully the streaming all comes together for the First Division clubs.
Brilliant, Kieran. Good luck with everything. Keep well.
Thanks, Conor. Okay, it's time to talk First Division for the first time on our episode Restart, as we're calling it. And we're going to start with Shamrock Rovers 2 against Drogheda United. We've just heard from the Drogheda chairman there. They'll be delighted to have football back. Obviously, they're away for this first game, but they're up against a really tricky opponent here, James. Shamrock Rovers 2, I think a lot of people thought they'd probably be a bit of a pushover when they came into the league, but they've been far from it. They only lost 2-1 against Waterford in a friendly recently as well, so they look well primed here ahead of their return to the league. While Drogheda, they hammered UCD 5-1 just before the league was stopped, so they'll be looking to pick up where they left off. But it could be a bit of banana skin here this game for them.
Yeah, I think Rovers too. We've already seen, I think the one of the teams they've drawn so far was Galway.
Yeah.
Where you're maybe fancying Galway to beat them. I know that was played maybe back conditions, but you know, there was a question mark hanging over them. I think now we've seen, while it is a young side, there's plenty of talent at Rovers, and certainly they'll take their chances. We mentioned the likes of Dean Williams in the Premier Division preview, who's been banging them in for fun. You know, if he doesn't make, say, the likes of the first team squad, he could be playing for Rovers too at the weekend. You just don't know. So certainly I think every club that plays them, you know, will have to be really, really switched on. Drogheda, I think the defeat to Longford means they're probably playing a bit of catch-up in terms of the title race, which I think, I know Cabo were top, but I do think Longford and Drogheda are the two favourites.
Yeah.
So really, games like this are ones you need to be winning. I actually saw Drogheda recently. They played Dundalk in a friendly last week, and I thought they looked good. Obviously, Chris Lyons will cause problems and get goals up top, and they look a well-drilled side. I like what Tim Clancy's done there. I'd probably narrowly say they might shade the likes of this one, but certainly Rovers too, or, you know, I think any team that takes them for granted could get found out against them in the remaining matches.
Yeah, I'm glad you've pointed him out there. Lyons, he's a class act. I'm very surprised that Drogheda were able to keep a hold of him, but he could be just the difference in a game like this against a very stubborn opponent. But if Drogheda do slip up there, the likes of Longford and Cabo will be looking to take advantage. And we'll move on to talk about Bray now, because they've had a little bit of an inconsistent start themselves. They've got 3 points from their two games so far. They sit in fifth and they take on sixth place Cove. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, it's probably a difficult one to call this of all the games. You probably lean towards Bray just from the basis of home advantage. Did a good pre-season win over Waterford recently, and you just imagine sooner or later someone like Gary Shaw will get them a few goals, and, you know, with the experience of Paul Keegan in midfield, and, you know, I know they've added to their ranks recently with Callum Thompson and Sean McAvoy, so I think they could be, they're probably one to be looking at maybe the playoffs, but again, they need that bit of luck. I think they probably had on paper anyway, maybe did a stronger push for that last season, but, you know, definitely if they can get someone like Shaw firing, I think hardest thing is to get goals, and he could be massive for them.
Yeah, what I've actually got wrote down in my notes here is that a lot will rest on Gary Shaw this season. I just think with Williams obviously leaving them last year, that they were a lot of goals went out with that team. Dylan McGlade left as well, of course. So there's a lot of pressure on Shaw, but he's been there and done that in terms of the First Division, promoted with Longford in 2014. And he's played in Europe with Rovers, and he's played for Pats as well in the top flight. So he's a really, really experienced player. He's been at Bray before as well, so he knows the club inside out. But they'll need to tighten up at the back. Of course, they've conceded 4 against Cabo on the opening night. And they've been up and down, as I said, in their games so far. They were unflattering in their win over Wexford. 2-0 was the final score. It was a professional performance, but you'd like to just see them kick on and do a little bit more now, because there is quality in that team, as you mentioned. And if they want to be up there with Longford and Drogheda this year, I think this is the sort of game they need to win. But just on Cove as well, they're a little bit like Shamrock Rovers too. They're a really stubborn opponent. They're a team no one ever likes to take on, so you wouldn't be surprised to see them take a point here. But I just want to mention on Cove the work they've done off the field over the last couple of months. They've done absolutely Trojan work down there. They were selling match jerseys from last year, and they sold the whole lot of them, home jerseys, away jerseys, third jerseys. I know a couple of Longford fans that even bought them, and they've been doing loads of stuff off the pitch as well. It's great to see a club like that trying to make the best of a bad situation, isn't it?
Yeah, they're a fantastic club. I've actually been down there in the last two seasons. and really like what they do, really like their, what, you know, they just make you feel so welcome. It's a great place to visit. You know, I think they probably had their best chance of promotion a few seasons ago and maybe missed out on it, but, you know, I really, really like what they do. They bring in some good players too, some good young quality players, and definitely, you know, we were talking earlier off air about maybe the first division being forgotten, and I think it's particularly sad for the likes of Cove, who are such a well-run club and do produce good players from time to time. And, you know, particularly now with the not being included in the streaming and stuff, you miss out on these as well. And it just would be a sin if, you know, the first division was forgotten about. I know that's an overall problem, but particularly for the likes of Cove, maybe, you know, might not be in the shake-up for promotion come the end and may not get the media coverage that, say, Longford or even Drogheda might get. But I think it is something that I'd worry about for someone like them. But, yeah, definitely what they've done, they're right up there in terms of, you know, I believe they're even planning maybe a streaming package themselves, hopefully. So that could be massive.
Yeah, very much so. Let's move on to speak about Athlone against Wexford, and then we'll talk Galway, Cabo and UCD Longford, and we'll hear from Lido Latifa before we go as well. Athlone against Wexford, this is 10th against 8th in the First Division. Athlone, they've conceded 3 goals in both of their defeats against Cabo and Cove. While Wexford, I think they've had a decent start to the season. They've got 2 points on the board already from their 3 games, but they gave Bray a good game. And they took points against UCD on the opening weekend as well. They look a lot more organised at the back than they have in recent years. And I'm not sure if he's actually signed yet, but I know Jack Doherty, he's left Longford Town and he was on trial, or he was playing in one of the friendlies for Wexford, and he was there last season or the season before. And he's a real creative spark in that midfield for Wexford. So if he does re-sign, then it just gives them a little bit something going forward that maybe they were lacking at the start of the season.
Yeah, like there's certainly... You know, they're being competitive, I think, which is the main thing.
Yeah.
There were times last season they weren't. You know, they've already, as you said, they took points off Galway, UCD, and I think they actually beat Cork in a friendly recently as well, which, you know, it's a massive confidence boost going into the season. You know, having said that, I suppose Athlone have had a good few weeks as well. I think they beat Sligo in a friendly, drew with Finn Harps, and, you know, from what I'm led to believe, they were quite competitive against Dundalk and Shells in other games, so maybe they'll keep going. It's a funny one, this. I wouldn't predict either team to be in the shake-up for the playoffs or anything like that, but, you know, when you're without a win so far, it's sometimes just great to get the first on the board, and could be a big one this week, depending on what way it goes.
Yeah, and I was just looking back at past results for this one to see if there are any trends, and there is one. Just as you said, it's such a strange fixture, this one. The last 7 games have been a win for Wexford, Athlone, Wexford, Athlone, Wexford, Athlone. So surely it's Wexford's turn again this weekend. But
the proverbial coin toss game.
Yeah, very much so. So a battle there to try and avoid a bottom place finish, as it has been in the last couple of years. I'm sure they'd both like to finish above Rovers too as well, who have only joined the league. So be an interesting result to keep an eye on, that one between Athlone and Wexford this weekend. Let's move on to Galway against Cabo. Galway, they've had a really underwhelming start to the season, haven't they, James?
Yeah, I expect them to be in the mix up. You know, really, I thought to be thereabouts, at least for the playoffs, if not for the actual title. Now, they may yet be, but, you know, drawing with Rovers, I think, was a disappointing result. And then following up with a draw with Wexford, you know, they just need a win on the books pretty soon. You know, they've had a bit of up and down over lockdown. I know they've brought Shane Doherty back in, but they've lost Dean O'Halloran and Dylan Sacramento. So you just sometimes wonder where the goals are going to come from. I know Mikey Place went there and was high hopes for him, and he's someone I actually liked and thought he'd do well there. He just hasn't got going yet. Maybe he just needs that one to get firing, I suppose. You know, did a good win over Cork recently as well, but so some of the other parts of his books, I don't know much to read into that. But this is one now, particularly with the way Cam and Teeley have started, I think they really need to get a win here, I think, if they're going to get their season back on track, because if they let Cabo take points here, I think it's a long, long way back, even at this early stage, I think.
Yeah, very much so. Cabo, they've been just phenomenal to start season. 3 wins from 3, and You're wondering where the goals is going to come from in that Galway team. We know where they're coming from in this Cabo team. Shane Barnes has already got three. He's the top scorer in the division, and that's been a real boost, I suppose, to Pat Devlin, because when they lost Rob Manley to Longford, they probably were concerned where they were going to replace those goals from. But Barnes has started the season brilliantly, and Kieran Marty Water is still there as well. But just going back to Galway, yeah, you make great points there, James. When I seen Mikey Place going there, that caught my attention straight away. I thought, this man's going to get goals in the first division. And Vinny Fatterley, I'm not sure what's happening with Vinny. He hasn't played in any of the games yet, so we might try and find some more info there, whether he's picked up an injury or whether there's something else going on. I'm not sure, but they've had Enda Curran starting up front for them in a good few of their games, and he couldn't cut it with Longford a couple of years back. He's been playing non-league football. I just don't think he's a first division player. So unless players can find a bit of form now after the restart, I would be worried for where the goals might come from for Galway. But as you mentioned, Doherty's back from the States. He had a nice little goal scoring streak just before he left, so he'll bring a bit of attack and flair back to that team. But as you said, it's a long way back for Galway if they don't get a result against Cabinteely this weekend. The final game we're going to preview now is UCD against Longford, and then we're going to hear from Longford's new loan signing from Dundalk, Lido Latifa. Longford unbeaten from two games so far, and they're the only team in the division yet to concede a goal, and UCD need to bounce back from that 5-1 hammering against Drogheda. But they've got a good goal scorer there in Colin Whelan, and he could test that Longford back four this weekend.
Yeah, he's been very impressive for me. I've seen him once or twice now at this stage. But I think sometimes with a team like UCD, kind of an up and down sort of panel. I think obviously a couple of years ago, you know, they came up and were a great first division winning side, and you know, the likes of Greg Sloggett was on that team, and a few others that have gone on to, you know, bigger clubs. Back to even the era of, you know, Roland Finn, Andy Boyle and stuff being there. I just don't think this one is as strong, and you know, you'd have to wonder with schools etc. being off as well, how much of this team actually been together. You know, normally they'd be playing like the Collingwood Cup and stuff, and basically playing a 12-month season. Where are they now in terms of, you know, their preparation? I tried to look up a few of the results, you know, in terms of friendlies. I haven't come quite a great amount. For me, I think Longford are the best team in the first division. I've seen them recently against the Dock, and from what I'm led to believe, even though Bowes won, they were very good the other night against Bowes. And I think, you know, I can only see one winner in this game, to be honest with you. I think Longford, if they are going to win this the division this season, I think these are the ones that need to be winning.
Yeah, and of course, there was a famous game between these two a couple of seasons ago where Longford went to UCD and they won 5-1, and Longford were only 4 points off the top then at that stage, and everyone thought that the title march was on, but the campaign fell apart a little bit after that. So it's a big game, big test for Longford. It's not the easiest of starts, but I don't think any game is going to be easy this weekend because of the factors we've mentioned, no crowds and just teams trying to find their feet again. But as I said, I just worry Whelan could be a big threat to this Longford back four. I think Dara's probably still trying to find his best back two. He's got good options there with Joe Manley. He's got Mick McDonnell, and he's got Joe Gorman as well. But for me, Manley and Big Mick, as we call him, Mick McDonnell, is probably the best back two partnership. And I know Shane Elworthy is trying to get back to fitness after a couple of injuries as well. So if he's not starting, it'll be a big blow for Longford. But if Longford can keep it tight like they've done so far this season, then there's more than enough going forward there with the likes of Rob Manley and Shane Grimes, Niall Barnes. There's loads of attacking options for Longford. Sam Verdon as well can chip in with goals. So I probably see Longford just shading this one, but could be a tight game. It'll probably be tight across the division this weekend, James, won't it?
Yeah, like I think you mentioned it with, you know, we've only seen like the likes of the Bundesliga, the Premier League and stuff like that. It was cagey to begin with. I think it probably will open up a bit in a few weeks' time as players get fitness and form and stuff. But I think, yeah, there's a bit of an unknown quantity this weekend that, you know, someone like UCD would, you know, they are usually fit and stuff, you know, they could catch you on the hop very easily as well. You just don't know. It'd be a hard one to get. I know John's not here this weekend. I know you guys have great records of getting accumulators up. I wouldn't like to be trying to get an accumulator together from the fixtures this weekend, because you know, how do you price some of these games, even like from a bookmaker's perspective? It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think if I am going to have a bet this weekend, it'll probably be on the under goal market. But we're going to hear from another man now that's going to add to Longford Town's attacking threat in the remaining games this season. And he's arriving on loan from your club, James Dundalk. It's, of course, Lido Latifa. It wouldn't be our first show back without getting a Longford Town man on, and it's a new signing on loan from Dundalk. Lido Latifa joined us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Lido, welcome to the show.
Hey, hey, Kieran, how are you?
And on behalf of all the Longford Town fans, you're very welcome to the club. We're absolutely delighted to have you. Obviously, it's a big chance for yourself to go and get some competitive minutes under the belt. It's very, very hard to get into that Dundalk squad, but obviously I know you're very highly regarded around Dundalk, so are you looking to grab this opportunity with both hands now at Longford?
Yeah, the opportunity came to me and I said there's absolutely no way I could turn it down, you know, because we played you in the previous pre-season camp and you were very impressive to watch. And I said, and when the opportunity came, I said, I'd love to be part of this squad. You know, they're young, energetic, and they look like they know what they do. Mm. They move the ball well, so I'm more than happy to be here, you know.
Mm. I believe you may have had an opportunity earlier in the season to go out on loan, but as you said, Longford played Dundalk in pre-season, and you said yourself there's a certain style of play that Longford implements under Dara Doyle, so I'd imagine the club Dundalk are probably quite happy to send you to a club that plays a similar style of football, and for yourself, you must be looking forward to stepping into a team that will play an attractive style of ball.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to go somewhere where you know you can fit in, otherwise you're just wasting your time going to play for a team, let's just say, that don't even suit you. So in terms of suiting me and a team that gets about and plays football similar to the Dundalk, we felt like Longford was the best option for me and best option for me to kind of creep into the team and hopefully get some minutes.
Mm. And obviously you're coming to a team as well that are their goal, no doubt about it, is promotion. It's automatic promotion's the main goal, but if they have to do it through the playoffs, that's the way they'll have to do it. But it must be exciting to be joining a team that's every game is going to mean something now in the next couple of months.
Yeah. At the end of the day, we're all footballers and come from Dundalk, I've kind of learned to deal with pressure because we deal with it every day, you know. There's people always hoping that we lose just to make their day. So chasing promotion, all my promotion, it's a challenge, but I know we're all capable of doing it. Just once we have our attitude right and we have our head down and we're ready to work hard, then there's no reason why we can't achieve it.
Yeah, and you were telling me you're still going to be training with Dundalk during the days and then heading off to Longford Town training in the evening, so you'll certainly be fit anyway.
I will be fit, but yeah, I'm doing double sessions at the moment, so I'm in with Dundalk in the mornings, and then in the evenings I'm training with Longford, and then obviously playing the games on the weekends and stuff like that.
Mm. And you've had a chance already to bed into the Longford team. You've played a couple of friendlies against Pats and against Bowes there recently. How did you feel you were fitting in those few minutes you played?
I felt like I fit right in with the squad. Like, the boys are easy to play with. We're all on the same level. We all just want to get the ball down and move it, and it was kind of quick to gel in with the boys, you know. There was it's kind of easy to know what everyone's next move is, you know. That's how quick we can adapt to each other because we just want to play ball. So in terms of that, it was I felt like I fit in perfectly, you know.
And obviously you're coming from the biggest club in the country in Dundalk, and we all know the squad there, what a challenge it is for players to even get on the bench at Dundalk. But it's no guaranteed feat either that you'll get your place in this Longford team. You'll have to work for every kick, because there's some really quality midfield players in that team, isn't there?
Yeah, there's absolutely no guarantee at all. Neither from Dundalk or Longford told me that I'm guaranteed to play ball. It's really what I do, you know. So coming in, I know the quality in the squad. There's a lot of quality, especially in the midfield and the top three. There's a lot of quality in the team, and I'm just gonna have to award them, you know, and basically want them more to even have a chance of playing. So I'm ready to do that.
Obviously, you have played first team football for Dundalk, and particularly in the cup competitions. I've seen bits and pieces of you playing in Oriel. But for the listeners that haven't seen yourself in action, what kind of footballer would you describe yourself as? What's your main attributes?
My my main attributes would be getting the ball and kind of going at players. You know, I like to, I'm very attack minded. I like to go for it. I like to score goals. I like to get assists. And for sure, I'll definitely break my back for this team and for any team I play for, to work hard and to make sure that the job is done. You know, just technical, and I like to play ball. That's me.
I think the Longford fans are liking what they hear already. But look, as I said, you've played a couple of games for Longford, and you were playing a couple of games for Dundalk before that. So you've had the experience of playing a couple of behind closed door games already. But obviously, when we return, it's going to be competitive stuff, points on the line. Do you think it might take a couple of weeks for players to get used to it? Because we've seen that in the Premier League in England. We've seen it in the Bundesliga, the first couple of games back, that they weren't great to watch, to be honest. Do you think we might see something similar in the League of Ireland, or the fact that it's such a short season now, the teams have absolutely no time to waste? They just have to go for every win they can get.
Yeah, as I was saying, just once we got back in, it was kind of difficult, you know, because of the occasion and stuff like this. The game kind of felt dead. Like, the games kind of felt dead. So it was kind of hard. First few games, it was hard to get in a rhythm. But then again, we're pros and we're fighting for places. So you've just got to up your game and just throw out your system and just go for it, you know?
Mm. And finally, before we go, UCD is the game on Friday where Longford restart their campaign. They've only played two games, Longford. They've won both of them so far. It's going to be a tricky opposition, though, in UCD. They're another side that are quite technical, so it could be a good game to watch.
For sure. First game back, I can almost predict it's going to be entertaining from both sides, because first game back, you want to start off with a win. So it's going to be entertaining in that sense, but I know we're going to go down with the right mindset and not get ahead of ourselves in any type of way, and go and do anything possible to grab the 3 points away from home.
Lido, absolutely fantastic speaking to you once again. Welcome to the club, and we'll speak to you again throughout the year, I'm sure.
No problem, Kieran.
Thanks very much. So before we go, James, I know you're a great man for European chat down the years. You always have great info on Dundalk and their upcoming opponents. And we're not too far away from the Champions League and Europa League qualifiers taking place in this very, very strange year. What's the latest from a Dundalk perspective ahead of their European charge this year?
Well, I suppose we're waiting the first round draw, I think, for Dundalk. That's the 10th of August, which, you know, we won't find coming around now. You know, it's a weird one this year. It's all such an exciting period, and I think particularly, you know, I feel sorry for Bowes this year after so long out of Europe. I know so many of their fans were looking forward to it. It's obviously hard for everyone, but there's usually such great excitement, and it's, you know, the day of a draw can be a bit like planes, trains and automobiles in terms of, you know, looking how to get there. What we do know is that there'll be no fans against this year in Europe, regardless of where they're played. Which is a great pity, because they are some special nights. You know, there's also a bit of a dilemma in terms of what happens if, say, Dundalk or another club draws a team from, you know, somewhere outside the green list. I was just looking at the potential opponents for Dundalk the other day. Their draw is obviously a week or two ahead of the Europa League draw, which Rovers, Bowes and Derry will be in. Of the 16 teams that Dundalk can draw, only three are in green list countries. Mm. And one of them are Europa FC, who are the champions of Gibraltar. So you can't get to Gibraltar without going into Spain. So it's just it's a bit up in the air in terms of where games could take place, you know, because it's not feasible for Dundalk to maybe have to quarantine. And equally, I don't know how the Irish government would feel if, say, a team from, say, the likes of maybe Belarus come into Ireland and you know, don't quarantine for 14 days before, you know, maybe coming to be at Oriel Park or wherever else the game might be played. So there are those hurdles to get over. There could be a potential where, you know, even if they're drawn at home, you know, Dundalk or one of the other clubs in the preceding weeks may have to play it in a neutral venue, and by neutral venue I mean neutral country, that would be agreed by UEFA. So it's very much up in the air at the minute, because we don't know what way the COVID-19 is going to go. But, you know, it is an exciting time, I suppose, for clubs. But I do think the shine maybe will be taken off a little bit this year. And, of course, they are one-legged games in the qualifiers. So, you know, we could have a few shock results as well where it could work out for you. Maybe, if, you know, particularly a home draw, if you can get it, would be massive. But, you know, it could also go against you as well, where maybe you could be caught in the hop by a team you'd maybe fancy beating normally, but over two legs. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I do think Europe just won't be what it was this year, I think.
Yeah, it's such a huge shame, because particularly in a town like Dundalk, I mean, every time Europe comes around, the town is head to toe in black and white scarves, or in flags, I should say. Every shop and household puts up flags and bunting, and just an absolutely unbelievable buzz. And you'd see the massive queues outside Oriel for tickets, and we're not going to have that this year. So it's a huge shame. But obviously, Dundalk, they've made a few European additions, haven't they, this year? Likes of Stefan Kolovic coming in. Do you think they're done in terms of transfers now ahead of their European campaign?
Well, what I'm led to believe, and I'll share this one with you, Kieran, and I'm going to run with it in the morning myself in the local paper, the Argus. I'm led to believe David McMillan is on the way back, and will sign and potentially be in the squad for Friday's game against the Patrick's Athletic. I suppose he's been a free agent since leaving St Johnstone in May, and it just didn't probably work out the way he would have hoped in Scotland. But I think his record, I think he got 74 goals for the Dock in his last stint with the club, and obviously 7 in Europe. He's the league's all-time leading Champions League goal scorer, and he's Dundalk's leading all-time goal scorer in Europe, and he just probably gives something different to, you know, what's there at the minute. You know, he's certainly a hard-working striker, and I think he could be a big addition, particularly with Europe in mind, if he can get back to the sort of form he had, you know, before leaving at the end of 2017.
Wow, absolutely massive. You heard it there first on Between the Stripes LOI podcast, folks. David McMillan looking set for a return to Oriel Park. Yeah, he was synonymous with that 2016 European run. I remember being at the game in Tala against Batay when he headed in that equaliser on the night. The first goal when Horgan whipped in that beautiful cross from the left. And he was always a great man off the bench as well. If he ever come off the bench in games, he just had that bit of aerial presence about him. Not that Patrick Hoban or Georgie Kelly don't have aerial presence, but as you said, he just gives them something a little bit different. But I suppose, what does that mean for Georgie Kelly? Because he's already getting hard to get minutes with Hoban in there. He's going to be third in the pecking order, you'd imagine now. And I just wonder, would the club maybe consider a loan spell, maybe to a team like Longford?
It wouldn't shock me to see Georgie go out alone. I wouldn't say it'd be Longford. I think Pats are maybe the favourites at the minute. Right. Derry will probably also be in the mix. But if I was, I think if he does leave, it could be somewhere like Pats. We'll see him go to. But we'll see what happens in that to come. I think Georgie's been a little unlucky in terms of, you know, his goals to minute ratio was actually very good. But I suppose since coming in, Patrick Hoban's just been in such scintillating form, I suppose, you know, since rejoining the club. And, you know, already he'd started the season so well. He's 5 goals so far. And, you know, this is the problem, I suppose, that clubs are going to have, not just Dundalk, but with 13 matches, do players become frustrated by their lack of game time? You know, fringe players in particular, who maybe relied from the likes of even the Sports Cup and that for their minutes. How do they get game time? So, you know, these are things the managers have to factor in. I know there's obviously additional subs this year, but some players just won't get many minutes, and that's why you spoke to him already. It's great to see someone like Lido, you know, go out and try and make a name for himself at Longford.
James, it's been an absolute treat having you on the show. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks very much for being the co-host tonight. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed our first show back, episode restart, as we're calling it. I'd ask everyone to please subscribe on iTunes and Spotify and all of the other podcast outlets, wherever you get your podcast outlets for your podcast from. Just search for Between the Stripes LOI podcast and you'll most likely find us there, because we're pretty much on all of the outlets. And of course, we're on Twitter as well. At Between Stripes is our handle. We're on Facebook. Search for Between the Stripes. Between the Stripes, I should say. It'd be useful if I got the name right. And the links are always up there for the shows as well. So, James, been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. And best wishes to Dundalk for the restart. And again, we pass our condolences on to everyone at the club and all of the Taff family as well.
Thanks for having me, Kieran. And great to have Between the Stripes back as well. I think starting as I said, it's good to talk football again, and it is, and hopefully we've plenty to talk about over the weekend.
Brilliant. James, thanks very much, folks. We'll speak to you again next week.